This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
This is retired Senior Chief Rob Burrows, Director of the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host today for Battlefield Expressions. And today is a very important day for multiple reasons. Number one, it's June 6th, which is D-Day, and we're going to talk about D-Day and some of the information about what took place at that time. We want to make sure that we remember our veterans who served that day and gave their lives toward the end of World War II. There in Nazi Germany. And I have a special guest with me today, Ken Jenkel. He's a Vietnam veteran with the Black Horse 11th ACAB, which is Armored Cavalry Regiment, and he ACR, and he is going to be our guest for the second hour. And just it's a real privilege to know Ken. He's been part of the museum since the very beginning, and his donations and his thought process and the other veterans that he has brought to us, just some wonderful opportunity. And so I'm grateful to have Ken with us here for the second hour. This morning, I just want to let you know that as we move forward with the Northern California Veterans Museum, you know, it's kind of quiet out there. It's quiet out there if you're not out and about, but the museum business continues to take place. So we're constantly working with our 2110 building there on North Street, which is our offices and archive and some displays for the museum office. And then we also were continuing to move forward with the museum property. And then also with the fire station facility, which is down in Cottonwood, which is our restoration facility now for museum vehicles and equipment that is donated and things like that. World War II generators and the large 30-foot destroyer model that's there that we'll be restoring. We have just all kinds of wonderful opportunities for us as we continue to move forward. So I want you to know, even though you don't see us in the news or you don't see us out there in the papers, whatever else, we are working feverishly behind the scenes to continue to take care of the restoration and the donations that are brought to the museum. In honor of our veterans, we continue to help those that are in need as we get phone calls and we're able to step out and help veterans that are in need in our community. Also, our Widows program, the Silver Star Widows and Veterans program, helping our seniors that are in need. We get phone calls all the time, and as we have the advocacy, we're able to move forward and continue to help in those areas. So it's really important for you to know in the community that we are might be out of sight, but we are not out of mind. And so since they don't want all these extra events and things going on, we are still out there taking care of things behind the scenes. The mission continues. And it's so important as we continue to move forward. You know, the building at 2110 North Street is the Joe P. Gonzalez World War II Memorial Building. And I want to talk just a really quick a little bit about Joe Gonzalez. Joe Gonzalez lived there in Anderson. He was in the United States Army in the 97th Infantry Division during World War II. He was there at D-Day, and he was with his unit as they moved forward from the beaches of Normandy on up through Germany to the Rhine River and on into the taking over of Germany from the Nazis during that time frame. The 97th Infantry Division, if you didn't know, was the last division during World War II to fire the last shot of the war. And at the very end of the war time frame, a German 109 came through, a fighter aircraft, the Fokker 109 came through, and they shot it down. And those were the last shots fired by the American forces in Europe at the very close of World War II, and that was part of Joe Gonzalez's unit. Joe Gonzalez was awarded the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star for his actions, his bravery, and his courage during that time frame. He's about 21 years old. And as they were moving up through Germany, his unit had come to the Rhine River, And they asked for volunteers to go across the Rhine. And the area where they were at, the Rhine River, was about 300 yards across. The Rhine River is a big river. And it was about 300 yards across. And they took a patrol by boat early one morning, and they crossed that river to find out what the Nazi stronghold was, the strength of the Nazis on the opposite shoreline. And so he was one of the men that was in that volunteer group as they crossed the river early in the night hours of that morning. They got to the other side, and at dawn, the Nazis found out where they were at, and they pinned them down, and they held them down with multiple machine gun positions. And so they were wounded, and they did everything they could to just hunker down on the shores of the Rhine River to stay out of the way of the bullets. Well, during that time frame, their boat became loose at the shoreline, and it floated down the river about 300 yards, and it was there. Stuck on the side of the river. And so they had no way to cross back across the river. They were pinned down. So they hunkered down throughout the day. They made it into the evening. And late into dark, they pulled their wounded together, and they were there on the shoreline. And in the early hours, 01:02, Joe Gonzalez took it upon himself. He swam down river. He got the boat, and he slowly brought it back to where his men were. And he was just a private. Took it upon himself to volunteer to go get that boat and bring it back. And under the cover of darkness, they went ahead and they reloaded the patrol back into that boat. They reloaded their wounded back into that boat, and they slowly made it across the Rhine River back to the American side in the early hours of the next day, saving all the lives and making sure no one was left behind. And for those actions, for that bravery, for that courage, Joe Gonzalez was awarded the Bronze Star for his actions, the Bronze Star with a V, which is valor, which is courage, to take it upon himself. You know, it's not just young men who step out and do courageous things. You can do courageous things at any age of your life. But the choice is, it's in your mind. Is in your mind to be courageous? Is it in your mind to be able to step forward when things are looking so rough, so bad, that nobody else will volunteer, nobody else will step up to do those things? And that's where the courage comes from young men who are put in those positions. It doesn't matter whether it was World War II, World War I, Vietnam, Iraq. The whole idea is that when the need is there, and those that step forward and have faith and courage to be able to make those things happen, it is what it's all about, to take care of things that are in need, and when things look like they're so desperate, to step forward to be able to make that happen. You know, we talked about Psalm 91 last week, which is the soldier's prayer. But there's many different prayers. There's many different scriptures that give courage. And I'd like to give you two scriptures of courage today, because in the way our world looks right now, it seems like every day things are getting worse and worse. But you know what? If you believe in God and you believe in the scripture and you have the courage and the faith to know that God's in control, not these people that are out there doing what they're doing. Yeah, they're evil. There's no doubt about that. But we need to make sure that our faith and our strength comes from God. Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. And so these times of trouble, you know, there are many different scriptures and things that when guys are in the ditches and they're being shot at and the bombs are going off and the IEDs and the mines and everything else, you know, they say there's no atheists in the foxhole. Well, if when you're being shot at, you're grasping for the ground, you're calling out for safety from somewhere. And that safety and that strength you draw from God. Psalm 27:1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is my strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When all these things are going on around us right now, and it looks like the communities are trying to burn down, the country's going to hell in a handbasket, you know what? The Bible says that God's in control of our leadership. It also says it controls the things that go on around us. But we have to have the courage. We have to have the faith that we need to move forward, even under fire. Whether it's the fire of the community, the fire of the media, the fire of the socialistic things that are going on, even sometimes the fire of our friends or even the family that's around us that doesn't believe or doesn't know how to move forward. We draw our strength from a higher source. That courage, that strength is from our God. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. As we come back in a few minutes, we'll start talking about D-Day and some of the important things to remember as we honor those who served that day.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Did you know that the City of Reading has started licensing commercial cannabis activities within the city limits? Synergy is the first of the city's approved retailers to obtain licensure, bringing to the Reading area the most experienced retailer in the North State. They will ensure that your visit is both professional and comfortable. Access is simple and discreet. Synergy has a private 25-space parking lot at the back of the building. Synergy is located at 345 Hempstead Drive, Reading.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays, 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE. Or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard, or visit us at estategranite.com.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference before, during, and after disasters such as hurricanes, tornadoes, floods, or wildfires. So when disaster strikes, you want to be prepared to protect them. Be sure to microchip or tag your pets. Never leave them behind in a major crisis, and be sure to have an emergency kit ready in your home at all times with a pet crate or carrier, leash, blanket, ID, and medications, their water bowl, and 7 to 10 days worth of food. To find out how to protect your entire family during a disaster and help our best friends in their worst times, please visit AmericanHumane.org.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and today is June 6th, D-Day. We're going to be talking about our World War II veterans a little bit more. You're listening to KCNR, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, your talk radio show. And so this morning we want to say thank you to our sponsor, Foster's Brush Hog Service. Their phone number is 440-9531. Foster's Brush Hog Service, locally owned and insured, giving veterans and elderly discounts, specializing in fire compliance services. fire breaks, after storm cleanup, removal of waste left from transients, and all different types of tractor services, stump removal. They do a great variety of different businesses is taking care of all your outdoor resources here in our community. They're in Anderson. They're centrally located. And once again, that's Keith Foster, Foster Brush Hog Service. That number is 440-9531, 440-9531. And Keith and his family help sponsor this program in honor of his father, who is a Korean War veteran, United States Navy Korean War veteran. And so thank you, Keith, for honoring your father. Thank you for helping the museum and honoring all of our veterans. Once again, also this program is brought to you by the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, Silver Star Veterans and Widows, and Homeward Bound Military Family Support Services. And being out in the community to help take care of things. If you'd like more information about the museum office and as we move forward to the project, or if you have a veteran that is in need or a widow that is in need, and we can help them with the resources that we do have. We have limited resources. We haven't had any fundraisers coming in. As you know, with all the different nonprofits, and so our tank of funding is slowly getting lower and lower. And one of these days, we'll just to the point where we just won't be able to help anyone else with financial services because the money's not there. If you would like to donate money to the Northern California Veterans Museum or its services to our community, we would greatly appreciate that. You can either give us a call at the museum office, which is 378-2280, 378-2280, or you could go to Northern California Veterans Museum on the Facebook page. There is a PayPal button there where you can donate either on our webpage or you can donate at the Facebook page. And so we want to remind you that we are a nonprofit. If the money doesn't come in, we can't give it back out. If the money doesn't come in, we can't pay our bills. And right now we are at minimum expenditure. I mean minimum expenditure. So we're paying for insurance services. We're paying for lights and water. And the nitty gritty, because we know if it's not coming in, it can't go out. So we're trying to be very frugal. We are in the black at this time, so no fear there. But we are, we have individuals who have made some donations, including my family. We make a financial donation every month to help offset the cost of the lights and water, to help continue this to move forward because we believe in it. We believe it's important. We believe in our veterans. And if we don't share their stories, we don't remember, then they are forgotten. And we will not forget those who sacrificed for us. Look, all this chaos out there, if you believe the media or whatever else, we would not have what we have if it wasn't for the men and women who sacrificed for us on a daily basis from the very inception of this nation. And it doesn't matter the hate that's spilled out there. It doesn't matter the lies that are spilled out there. The bottom line is that our freedom comes at the cost of those who sacrifice their blood, their service, their sacrifice for what we have. And this program is about talking about those veterans, about those who shed, those who gave their lives, and why that sacrifice is so important. If you've ever been outside the United States, you have to acknowledge the fact that there is no other nation greater than the United States when it comes to all of the benefits and blessings that we have as a nation. We are not a perfect nation. There are always issues that need to be taken care of. But we constantly have to maintain our freedom. We constantly have to continue to move forward. We have to support each other, and we have to know that what we have is better than anywhere else. And you know where it comes from? It comes back from to our faith in God, because God is the one that helps establish this nation and who gives us the strength to move on from day to day with that courage. And that's where my faith is, and that's where my faith was when I was in the combat zone being shot at and blown up and booby traps and improvised explosive devices, EIDs, and just all those things that happened. And sometimes I don't know how folks make it that don't have a faith, because life is tough. And some days it's all I can do is to draw upon that faith to get me through one situation to the next. And I know that God took care of me while I was in Iraq, and I have to be faithful to let people know that it was truly, I believe, it was only the grace of God that brought me back after being in the situations where we were at, where we should not have come home. And I know that there's other veterans that understand and know that too, and some may or may not accept that. But in my life, that's where I stand, and that's what I look at. So right now we're going to talk about D-Day, our World War II veterans. We talked a little bit about Joe Gonzalez. Our building is named after him and his service to our nation and our country. We're going to bring forward 10 things you need to know about D-Day. And while our doors are temporarily closed right now, you can still get a hold of us by the phone number at 378-2280 by appointment only. We're not just doing a general open service at this time. But it's so important for if you want to come and be a part, if you want still have a donation, if you have something that you'd like to donate, a uniform or books or military items or anything like that, we are still accepting all of those items because once they're gone, at this day and age in our society, they'll be gone forever. So it's so important for us, the museum, to continue to safeguard those items, to collect and house and archive, and to make sure that as we move forward with the larger facility that we can share those items. We have them prepared and ready to go so that we can fill those exhibits and make sure that we can present that honor and that sacrifice of our veterans in such a way to remember them and to honor them and to continue to teach our society, our young people, about why it is so important to honor our veterans and what's going on. So once again, I'll give that phone number one more time. It is 378-2280. The address is 2110 North Street, and that is our offices there on North Street in Anderson. And as we move forward, we're going to talk about D-Day now and for this next 45 minutes and try to get that information out. D-Day, 6 June 1944. Today is the 6th of June. Was the largest amphibious invasion in the history of warfare. The statistics of D-Day, codenamed Operation Overlord, are staggering. The Allies utilized over 5,000 ships and landing craft to land more than 150,000 troops on five beaches in Normandy. The landings marked the start of a long, costly campaign in Northwest Europe, which ultimately convinced the German High Command that the defeat was inevitable. Item number one, D-Day was the start of Operation Overlord. On D-Day, June 6, 1944, Allied forces launched a combined naval, air, land assault on Nazi-occupied France. The D in D-Day stands simply for Day or Decision Day, and the term was used to describe the first day of any large military operation. Many times the D-Day was used because they hadn't decided on the exact day because of weather, because of enemy action, because of resources that were available as far as logistics. And so the D was the decision day to move forward. And sometimes it was not even recognized until 2 or 3 days beforehand because of weather and utilization of manpower and things like that. Early on 6 June, Allied airborne forces parachuted into drop zones across northern France. Ground troops then landed across five assault beaches, Utah, Omaha, Gold, Juneau, and Sword. By the end of the day, the Allies had established a foothold along the coast and could begin their advance into France. Item number two, Overlord opened the long-awaited second front against Germany. The defeat of Germany was acknowledged as the Western Allies' principal war aim as early as December 1941. Opening a second front would relieve pressure on the Soviet Union in the east, and the liberation of France would be weakened Germany's overall position in Western Europe. The invasion, if successful, would drain German resources and block access to key military sites. Securing a beachhead and a bridgehead in Normandy would allow the Allies to establish a viable presence in Northern Europe for the first time since the Allied evacuation from Dunkirk in 1940. Item 3. D-Day required detailed planning. Lieutenant General Frederick Morgan and his team of British, American, and Canadian officers submitted plans for the invasion in July 1943. Although limited planning for an invasion of Europe began soon after the evacuation of Dunkirk in 1940, detailed preparations for Operation Overlord did not begin until after the Tehran Conference in late 1943. A command team led by the American General Dwight D. Eisenhower was formed in December 1943 to plan the naval, air, and land operations. Deception campaigns were developed to draw German attention and strength away from the Normandy beachhead. To build up resources for the invasion, British factories increased production in the first half of 1944. Approximately 9 million tons of supplies and equipment crossed the Atlantic from North America to Britain. All of those were the rosy riveters and all those plane makers and tank makers and ammunition builders from the United States, and all of that went to Britain in preparation for our men and women to cross the sea between Britain and France for the Normandy invasion. A substantial Canadian force had been building up in Britain since 1939, and over 1.4 million American servicemen arrived during 1943 and 1944 to take part in these landings. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We're in the items. We're talking about 10 greatest things of the D-Day. We'll be coming back with item number four in just a minute.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 7 with the Sue McClain News Hour. I'll have your up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at am1460.com.
Hi, this is Mark from Haven Humane Society. It has been a challenging couple of years, and through it all, our amazing team has continued to save lives. We have so many fantastic animals that are looking for their forever homes, and with adoption fees so low, now is the time to add to your family. With puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and so many more, we have the perfect addition. Come join our team as a volunteer and help in an area that works for you. Walking dogs, socializing cats, helping in our veterinary hospital, or folding laundry. We have many opportunities and welcome all volunteers. For more information, please visit our website at havenhumane.org or follow us on Facebook. On behalf of the entire Haven team, thank you for all of your continued support as together we get closer every day to North State with no more homeless pets.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
Home Helpers of Reading is now hiring. They are a home care agency who provide non-medical home care services for seniors in our community and are looking to add to their award-winning team of caregivers. If you're interested in flexible hours with opportunities for full or part-time work, we invite you to apply to join the Home Helpers team. Apply today online at readinghomehelpers.com or drop off your resume at 2620 Lexmer Lane. Reading Home Helpers, serving our community for 16 years, and we look forward to meeting you.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and that's In the Mood by Glenn Miller, just a popular, wonderful World War II music that was played by my mother, a World War II wife, and my father, a World War II veteran, United States Navy gunner's mate on Liberty ships during World War II, and I listened as a child, as a kid, many times to the big band music. And so it would be Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey and some of the other big bands that she'd be playing. That was back on stereo with records and just that big band sound as it came across. I remember many times listening to that. We are talking about D-Day this morning, the invasion of American forces into the Nazi beaches of Normandy. And the items that we're talking about are the 10 things you need to know about D-Day. And we are on item number 4. D-Day was an international effort. D-Day required unprecedented cooperation between international and armed forces and the Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Force. It was an international coalition, and although the Allies were united against Germany, the military leadership responsible for Overlord came to overcome political, cultural, and personal tensions. By 1944, over 2 million troops from over 12 countries were in Britain in preparation for the invasion. On D-Day, Allied forces consisted primarily of American, British, Canadian troops, but also included Australian, Belgian, Czechoslovakia, Dutch, French, Greek, New Zealand, Norwegian, Rhodesian, and Polish naval and air ground forces in support. It was critical for all of the Allies to be able to come together to eliminate the Nazi threat, the Nazi war machine. Item number five, the largest naval and air land operation in history. The invasion was conducted in two main phases, airborne assault and amphibious landings. Shortly after midnight on 6 June, over 18,000 Allied paratroopers were dropped into the invasion area to provide tactical support for infantry divisions on the beaches. You can hear that. Hey, Ken, you got your trumpet going off over there. He's got his phone going, so he's getting that extra sound effects here on our stage. Over 18,000 Allied paratroopers were dropped into the invasion area to provide tactical support for infantry divisions on the beachheads. Allied air forces flew over 14,000 sorties in support of the landings, and having secured air supremacy prior to the invasion, many of these flights were unchallenged by the Luftwaffe. Nearly 7,000 naval vessels, including battleships, destroyers, minesweepers, escorts, assault craft, and ships took part in Operation Neptune. Operation Neptune was the Navy component or the component of the overall invasion for D-Day. And then when you hear Operation Overlord, that was the naval component for the beachheads. And that's why you hear mainly Operation Overlord for the for D-Day invasion. But it wasn't for the total overall operation. There was two. It was the main operation was Operation Neptune, and the sub-operation was Operation Overlord, which was Normandy beaches. Naval forces were responsible for escorting and landing over 132,000 ground troops on the beaches during that time. They also carried out bombardments on German coastal defenses before and during landings and provided artillery support for the invading troops. Item number six. German defenses in Normandy varied in effectiveness. Germany tried to defend the northern coast of France with a series of fortifications known as the Atlantic Wall. However, German defenses were often incomplete and insufficiently manned. Members of the French Resistance and British Special Operations Executive provided intelligence and helped weaken defenses through sabotage. The Allied deception campaign succeeded in convincing the Germans as late as July of 1944 that the main invasion force would still land elsewhere. The threat of this larger second invasion kept German forces tied down away from Normandy. Defense also suffered from the complex and often confused command structure of the German army, as well as the constant interference of Adolf Hitler in many of the military matters. However, the Allied faced a number of setbacks, both on 6 June in the months that followed. On D-Day, the Americans came close to defeat on Omaha Beach, partially because the preliminary air and naval bombardment failed to knock out the strong defense points, but also because they faced highly effective German troops who had gained hard-earned experience on the Eastern Front fighting against Russia. Throughout the Battle of Normandy, the technical superiority of their tanks and anti-tank weapons, as well as the tactical skill of their commanders, gave the German forces an advantage over the Allies. However, the Germans were never able to fully exploit the successes or the weaknesses of the Allies in a decisive way. Item 7. D-Day was possible because of Allied efforts elsewhere. Like I said, we talked about Rosie the Riveters and the men and women who were back in the United States who were in the aircraft factories making the tanks and bullets. The boys and girls who went out and collected the tin and the scrap metal and the tires and the rubber. And they collected the bacon grease. If you didn't know what they collected bacon grease was actually used in the manufacturing of ammunition, and they collected all of that. And so It was the effort of the men and women, the moms, the dads, the kids, the grandparents who helped make that happen, who brought all the supplies to the men and women who created the equipment, the B-17 bombers, the B-24 Liberators, the P-51 Mustangs, the F-4U Corsair fighters for the South Pacific, the Sherman tanks that we use in landing, whether it be the Pacific or the Atlantic, how important it was. It wasn't just a team effort on the front lines. It was a team effort on the home lines, the home front. And that's what it took, every man and woman stepping up. If you look at today across our nation, the waste and the greed and the selfishness, so much, what a difference between the attitude of the men and women who were fighting the Nazi war machine and the Imperial Japan and Mussolini and his dictatorship in Italy. And we still have some of those items all across the world right now. But now we're fighting domestic terrorism and people who don't like this nation, don't like this country. And the only reason for bad men to win is for good men to not say anything, to not do anything. And so once again, based on today as D6 and, excuse me, D-Day in the 6th of June, we want to encourage you as Americans to be strong, to hold your faith, to gather your courage. And it doesn't matter what happens out there. We need to stand firm in our beliefs. We need to stand firm and make sure that we continue to make this the best country. Yes, we have our issues. There's no doubt about it. Who doesn't? This is still the greatest nation in the world. I've been all around the world. I've fought in multiple combat situations in different countries. And the United States is still the best country in the world. And we need to continue to work hard. It doesn't just happen. We have to work at it. We have to do what it takes to step forward and to be examples. Whether you're in the service, whether you're a widow at home, or you're an older gentleman at home and you don't have the opportunity, step up. Get on your knees and pray. Right now, our nation needs more prayer than it needs anything else, because if we don't step forward and pray and get the courage that we need to move forward, we will have issues. This nation will fall. And so it's so important as we continue to move forward. This is our home front, and we need to fight on the home front, whether it's a spiritual warfare or it's a physical warfare. D-Day was made possible because of the Allied efforts across all fronts, both before and after June 1944. In planning D-Day, Allied commanders drew important lessons from previous failures at Dieppe in France and Anzio in Italy. The Allied strategic bombing campaign, which began in 1942, weakened German industry and forced Germany to commit manpower and resources away from Normandy to home defense. Securing all superiority allowed Allies to carry out aerial reconnaissance, giving them vital intelligence on German coastal defenses. D-Day also depended on Allied control of the Atlantic, which was finally achieved in 1943. Through victory in the Battle of the Atlantic, the campaign in Italy directed German troops away from the Western and Eastern fronts. The German-Belorussian offensive, Operation Bagration, was launched just after Overlord and destroyed the entire German Army Group Center. It also kept German forces tied down in the east. 10 weeks after D-Day, the Allies launched a second invasion on the second coast of France and began simultaneously advance towards Germany. Item 8. There's more to Normandy than just a D-Day. The importance of D-Day often overshadows the overall significance of the entire Normandy campaign, establishing a bridgehead for critical. But it was the bridgehead was critical and the beachhead were critical. But it was just the first step. In the 3 months after D-Day, the Allies launched a series of additional offensives to try and advance further inland. These operations varied in success, and Allies faced strong and determined German resistance. The bocage, a peculiarity of the Normandy landscape characterized by sunken lanes bordered by high, thick hedgerows, was difficult to penetrate and placed the advantage with the German defenders. Yet the bloody, protracted Battle of Normandy was a decisive victory for the Allies and paved the way for the liberation of the North and West Europe. If you come to the museum office, we have a display there for Joe Gonzalez in his World War II uniform and his actions for his Bronze Star. And one of the items that we have there is a clicker, and that clicker is that you press it and it clicks, and it sounds like a cricket. And during the invasion in at Normandy, through those hedgerows, those clickers were used. They knew that there were, we had to have some kind of friend or foe recognition of how to know who was a friend and who was a foe at night and through the hedgerows. And the American forces used that clicker like a cricket. And one click was a, hey, who are you? And two clicks back was, hey, I'm an American. And if you didn't respond back with the right click, then you would lose your life. The Germans used to tap their magazines on their rifles to try to simulate the same sounds, but it didn't work. And when the American forces heard that, they would fire upon the German soldiers that were there to help win that war. It was so important for friend or foe. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is a second-generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Medicare open enrollment is October 15th through December 7th. Help keep your drug costs low by reviewing your plan for the following year. Remember, Medicare plans can change each year. PSA2 Health Insurance Counseling Advocacy Program HICAP services are free and include individual counseling and assistance as well as community education services. PSA2 HICAP services does not sell, endorse, or recommend any specific insurance product. PSA2 HICAP is your trusted source for Medicare information. Call PSA2 HICAP services for more information. 530-223-09 or 1-800-434-0222. That's 530-223-0999 or 1-800-434-0222.
This project was supported in part by grant number 90SAPG00940100 from the U.S. Administration for Community Living, Department of Health and Human Services, Washington, D.C. 20201. Grantees undertaking projects under government sponsorship are encouraged to express freely their findings and conclusions. Points of view or opinions do not, therefore, necessarily represent official Administration for Community Living policy.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
He was a famous trumpet man from all Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
Good morning. Once again, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. I'm your host, Bob Burrows, and we're talking about D-Day, the 10 things you need to know about D-Day. Today is June 6th, if you haven't recalled. And it was the D-Day, June 6th, when the invasion took place in 1944. We're at item number 9 of our list of 10 things you need to know about D-Day. Northwest Europe was the most significant campaign fought by the Western Allies. Overlord did not bring an end to the war in Europe, but it did begin the process through which victory was eventually achieved. By the end of August 1944, the German army was in full retreat from France. But by September, Allied momentum had slowed. the Germans were able to regroup and launched a failed but determined counteroffensive in the Ardennes in December of 1944. This defeat sapped the German manpower and resources, which allowed the Allies to resume their advance towards Germany. In March of 1945, British and American troops crossed the Rhine, eventually linking up with the Soviet forces in Germany, as shown. Germany surrendered on May 7th, 1945. And so, as we look at item number 10, it says there were many D-Days throughout the war. That's right. Every large battle that took place had a D-Day. It had a decision day that was set up. Many of those were top secret. So that they talked about D-Day knowing that at certain times certain things were going to happen, but that they really didn't know until the day, the date was selected, depending on weather, manpower, and logistics, in order to make it happen. D-Day is a general term for the start date of any military operation. The D stands for day. It is often used when the exact date is either secret or not yet known. Some people thought soldiers serving in Italy were avoiding real combat in France and called them D-Day dodgers. But troops in Italy had faced their own D-Days at Sicily, Salerno, and Anzio beaches, and were engaged in dangerous and difficult advance up the Italian peninsula. I don't know how anybody could say that when they make those comments. You know, we still had men in North Africa. We had men in the Middle East during that time frame. We had fighting going on in Italy. It wasn't just, and they came up through Italy, through the boot of Italy, and up into Romania and all those other countries. And they went, they met the Germans over there in Czechoslovakia. And so there was combat along the entire forward edge leading into Europe from the ocean. And so it was all those men who served, whether they were at Normandy or they were in Sicily or whether they were at North Africa, they were Tarawa, and the beaches of Iwo Jima. It didn't matter. Those men, women who served during that time frame, it didn't matter what branch, Army, Navy, Air Force, Army Air Corps at that time, sailors, soldiers, Marines, every one of them, you know, to be honored for their service and for the sacrifice that they took and that they did during that time frame. The myth of war tells what is imaginable and manageable. The soldier's tale, in its infinite variety, tells the whole story. And so it's so important that we get the story from every single member. And to remember as we read, we have those archives there at our offices there for the Northern California Veterans Museum in Anderson. And this is our opportunity to continue to tell these stories so that these men, those women who served, their lives, their stories, their sacrifices are not forgotten. Because the only way for them to be forgotten is for us not to tell their stories. And that's how critical it is for us to continue to tell the stories of courage and valor and strength and sacrifice. Because we need to stand up, especially when there's so many social issues going on right now. We need to be the shining light that remember to show people, hey, this is why we have the country we have. This is why it was founded. This is because of the sacrifice that we have. And we're not going to let thugs in the street continue to manipulate. We as American citizens need to stand up in our hearts and in our homes, and we need to continue to pray so that we can engage these people on a different level than where they're at and not give up. Never. Winston Churchill, during World War II, at its most critical and darkest time, never, 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 ever give up. And we will not give up for our freedom and for what it takes for us to continue to move forward. We have a caller on the line, Janice.
Good morning, Rod.
Good morning. Good to hear from you this
morning.
Thank
you for your history on the D-Day. It's you're quite an orator. You just really bring us into it emotionally and intellectually. And the part of the thinking about World War II bring us to even to our own situation here in 220 with veterans in our country that return with a lot of emotional stress, and that's the concern I have. I talked to Rod yesterday. I've been real concerned about this statistic, which is hard for me to understand, the suicide rate. I believe that it is because the government has not established a very firm debriefing program, which would not be difficult to set up on a national scale.
We're referring to, you and I were talking about veterans coming back from the combat zone, and that's what we're referring
exactly
to.
Exactly, and the veterans. There's no debriefing let alone detoxing of all the chemicals they've been exposed to or have been injected with. And this is a big factor in this suicide. And then the third thing would be just your identity and the identity of who you are and where do you fit in now. And in the past, I know World War II veterans and Korean mentioned how they had a whole month on the ship to be with their buddies and to talk about it. And I believe that I have ideas on how this could be incorporated on our local level. I do think that, you know, as you mentioned, prayer is a real big factor and also support groups. I'm not sure what support groups are available right now, but that's a concern of mine.
Well, right now with the social distancing, there are no support groups going on.
Right.
And that's why there are a lot of suicides that nobody wants to talk about.
Right.
You know, just because you separate from somebody else doesn't give you the mindset or keep you from becoming depressed or allowing those terrible things from war or anything else to creep into your mind, especially late at night, and then to subdue you and take you over subconsciously when you actually get to a point where you take your life.
One of the books that really could help a veteran, it's called What It Is Like to Go to War by Carl Melantis, a very good writer. This is a very raw story about his own experience in Vietnam and what he experienced when he came back and how he dealt with his own debriefing. And it would be an excellent book to have in a small group for discussion. I think I'm going to contact him and see if he'd do a workbook to go with it.
And what was the title of the book again?
It is What It Is Like to Go to War. He has also written two novels, Matterhorn, and then there's a newer one from last year. But he was a Yale University and Rhodes Scholar from Oxford. But this would be a good starting point for discussion. So I believe they need a good veterans need an environment where they can share the rawness of what they felt without being judged. And
that's a big deal. If veterans coming back feel that there's any judgment or whatever else for things that they were sometimes forced to do or had to engage in just to live or survive, they won't talk about it. They'll hide that in their heart or hide that in their minds or behind, and that becomes a festering point in their lives that does not help them. And so
he was shocked to realize that at one point, you're still there?
Yes.
At one point, he said, I started to like the killing, and he knew that that wasn't him inside him.
Well,
but come back and deal with that.
It's dog eat dog. It's survival of the fittest, and it becomes that point. Well, the biggest thing that we wanted to talk about is that, you know, you're talking about the courage and the support. They've taken God out of the military. They've taken God out of the society. They've taken God out of all these locations. If you listen to the news, it's all about people doing people, taking care of people. It's all about people. Guess what? People fail every single day. It's not about people. It's about the strength of God in our lives. That's the bottom line. We cannot draw courage from people. We can draw courage from their example, but we cannot draw courage from them. It has to come from God. We have to pray to God for that courage and that strength. And at this time, when we're all stuck at home, the biggest opportunity that we have is to either read the scripture or pray. Because prayer will help this country more than anybody knows. But we've gotten so far away from it, and people are so afraid to talk about prayer. I'm not afraid to talk about it. It is what it is. I face bullets all over the world and bombs and everything else. I can go ahead and talk about God, talk about my faith, because that's the only reason I made it back, and I am a firm believer of that. And so how important it is to encourage others to gather their courage through the scripture and to also continue to pray. Like I said, Psalm 91 is a soldier's prayer. And I read that prayer before every one of my missions, before we stepped out of the wire. And I stepped and believed on the faith that God was going to take care of us if we went to Him and asked for His strength in our lives to carry on. And that's what it takes. Janice, thank you for your call. We'll talk again later at another time. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. We've been talking about D-Day, the 10 things you need to know about D-Day. Today is June 6th. And so we continue to remember those who went before us. A grateful nation remembers these individuals. And today, in our community, across KCNR, 1460 and 96.5, we're here to say thank you to our veterans and to remember D-Day, the men and women who sacrificed against the Nazi
from town
leadership for us to continue to have our freedom. Thank you.
KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
New in Washington. An update on the president's treatment for COVID-19 today at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center from White House physician Dr. Sean Conklin.
It's important to note the president's been fever-free for over 24 hours. We remain cautiously optimistic, but he's doing great.
Here's White House correspondent Greg Cluxton.
The president was flown to Walter Reed National Military Medical Center yesterday evening at the recommendation of his physician. A White House spokesman says the move was made out of an abundance of caution. Dr. Sean Conley says Mr. Trump was given a dose of experimental coronavirus antibodies as well as the antiviral drug remdesivir. In a brief video posted on Twitter, the president said, "I think I'm doing very well, but we're going to make sure that things work out." Greg Clugston reporting.
New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern wishing the President and First Lady Melania Trump a speedy recovery.
We've seen now several world leaders who have been affected by COVID-19, and I know that I stand with others in wishing all the best, because this is obviously a virus that has globally had a devastating impact.
White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow yesterday telling reporters, "Everybody's hoping for the best as the first family deals with the diagnosis.
We all pray for the First Lady and the President and my pal Hope Hicks."
Meanwhile, Kudlow also took time to remind reporters that some news that's been overshadowed by the COVID-19 diagnosis is a booming economy.
Over 900,000 new private jobs and a drop in unemployment to 7.9%. I think those are very solid numbers.
And the negative details of the president's COVID-19 diagnosis yesterday was enough to drive the financial markets down, but not terribly far at the end of the week. The Dow down 134 points to end the week at 27,682. More on these stories at townhall.com.
This message is for anyone looking for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance, even if you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or taking anxiety meds. Here's an example. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe overweight with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term life insurance may only cost about $200 a month. We're Term Provider, experts in finding affordable term life insurance for those that may not be in perfect health. If you've had prostate cancer, heart conditions, high cholesterol, or on prescription medications, you may still qualify for $500,000 to $1 million or more of affordable term life insurance. Get a quick quote by calling Term Provider at 800-555-2085. 800-555-2085. If you're looking for term life insurance but have type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, or have other health issues, call Term Provider at 800-555-2085 or visit termprovider.com. Termprovider.com.
COVID-19 is starting to have an effect on the way juries operate. We get more details in this report from correspondent Keith Peters.
A Virginia city's efforts to resume jury trials during the COVID-19 pandemic have stalled because most people being called to serve aren't showing up. The Virginian Pilot reports roughly 9 out of 10 possible jurors aren't showing up for court in Norfolk, a jump from the usual no-show rate of about 1 in 3. In one instance, a murder trial was supposed to start Monday, but only 25 of the 240 people summoned for jury duty came. Officials had to delay until Tuesday to call in 90 more. Only 5 showed, but it was enough. Keith Peters reporting.
Senate Republicans have canceled legislative work until October 19th as the coronavirus sweeps through their ranks. And lawmakers increasingly call for comprehensive testing on Capitol Hill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said in a statement today that the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett are still on. More from townhall.com. Baseball Hall of Fame pitcher Bob Gibson has passed away at age 84 following a bout with pancreatic cancer.
Bob Gibson will always be honored as one of baseball's toughest competitors. He won 2 World Series MVP awards
as he led the St. Louis Cardinals to championships over the Yankees and Red Sox. He fell short against the Tigers in 1968, despite setting a series record of 17 strikeouts in Game 1. He holds numerous baseball and team records for strikeouts, earned run average, shutouts, wins, and an almost obsolete record now in baseball complete games. He was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1981. He was preceded in death just under a month ago by his longtime teammate and fellow Cardinals legend Lou Brock, who died at age 81 from diabetes. George Bonzani reporting.
A U.S. district judge has dismissed New Mexico's privacy claims against Google. The judge concluding in a ruling federal laws and regulations don't require direct consent from parents when schools participate in Google's platforms. More details at townhall.com.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
All my bags are packed, I'm ready to go. I'm standing here outside your door. I hate to wake you up to say goodbye, but the dawn is breaking, it's early morn. The taxi's waiting, he's blown his horn. Already I'm so lonesome I could die. So kiss me and smile for me, tell me that you wait for me, hold me like you never let me go. 'Cause I'm leaving on a jet plane, don't know when I'll be back again. Oh babe, I hate to go.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions, and we are transitioning from World War II to Vietnam, and that's quite a transition. The dates for Vietnam War were November of 1955 to May 15th of 1975. So Vietnam really was only about 16 years after World War II, the very beginning, when we started sending advisors and everyone else over there to begin that transition of trying to fight communism at that time. And so if you didn't know that, most people think it was 65, but it wasn't 65. The initial numbers with our special forces who went over as advisors was actually November of 1955. And so as we get ready to step in, we talk to our guest, Ken Jenkel, who was with the 11th Armored Cav Regiment.
Correct.
And so good morning, Ken. Thank you for being here as our guest. You've got such an interesting story, and you're a great supporter of the museum, and you're a combat veteran of Vietnam, and it's a privilege for me to know you and to be able to have you here as my guest this morning.
It's my privilege to know you and to be asked to come on this show. It was very, very exciting.
So we want to talk about Andy Andreessen, who is a World War II veteran, actually before World War II, before Pearl Harbor. He was in the Army. It was actually
1934.
The original cavalry, when there were still horses.
Yes.
And so you brought Andy to us. He was a friend of yours. You came to know him, and you brought him to us at the museum. We were out at the airport off Meadowview Drive at that time. And when we'll talk a little bit about when we opened the doors, he was our guest, and he was 93 years old at that time. In 2009, when we opened the doors out at the Reading Airport for the Veterans Museum, and he sat there and shook the hands of every man and woman who walked through, and they thanked him for his service to our nation. Tell us a little bit about Andy as we get into the program.
Well, my name under a motorcycle organization was in our newsletter all the time, and Andy, living in Dunsmuir, had picked up my name and found out I was in Reading. So I get a phone call one day from this guy, and he says, "Hey, I hear you were in the 11th Cav." And I says, "Yes, I was." And we got talking for a little bit, about a couple minutes, and I asked Andy when he was in the 11th Cav. He says, 1934. I go, "Oh, my God." You know, I couldn't believe it.
Almost a founding member, because the 11th Cav was created back during the Spanish-American War in 1898.
Yeah, it was the 11th Cavalry at that time,
right?
11th U.S. Cavalry. You know, and they used horses. Of course, cavalry, I've been asked many times, you know, how can you be in a cavalry today? And it means mounted. So in today's armored cav is mounted on tanks.
Correct.
Or the 7th Cav, of course, is mounted on helicopters. So that's what mounted means. But from that point on, when I found out Andy had been in a cav on horseback, I mean, it just Andy became one of my dearest friends, because we could both relate to Army stuff, Calvary stuff. And most of the people around him, his whole family and everything was gone. And him and I could sit down and talk about Army stuff and Calvary stuff on and on and on. So, and that's
he was a neat man. Yeah, he was a neat man to talk to, and almost every word out of his mouth was historical.
Yeah, he was great. He had a unit crest collection that he wanted me to find out what to do with, and that's when we came over and met you and got involved.
We have that collection for the museum, and we're going to be putting that up. Actually, I'm trying to find a good wall space for that because it's so important for it to have its almost its own unique space so that people can look at the detail of that collection.
A unit crest, I'm sure that most military people know what the unit crest is. But Andy, back in the 30s, when anybody in his unit would leave, he would ask them if they'd give him his unit crest. And I don't remember how many he's got, but I think it's
over 500.
Yeah, and then he looked them all up, and the unit crest has the different things on it that the unit went through. So they all symbolize a certain, memory of that unit, which is awesome. And he had them in glass cases for you, and I can't wait for the museum to open so we can get those back up.
Right. I mean, that's a historical collection. I mean, that whole collection is Andy and Dredison by itself.
Yeah, and it's totally, totally awesome. So anyway, I got him involved with the 11th Cav, which is down at Fort Irwin today. They're opposing force down there. They came back after Vietnam and Germany. They put them out at Fort Irwin as the opposing force, and they invited us veterans out there whenever we wanted to go. They take my kids down there. We put my friends. They put us all on tanks and we played laser tag out there in the desert. It was awesome. So I took Andy down there, and the colonel. We went to a reunion, a Black Horse Association reunion, and they actually knighted Andy. As the oldest 11th Cav trooper still alive.
Wow.
You know,
that's
which,
an honor.
Which is honor. I have all of the, he passed away, and the 11th Cav actually sent the color guard from Fort Irwin up to Reading, up here at Igo, which was amazing, for some of the generals that knew Andy, they had to send the color guard. We had the National Guard, the color guard, and you were there.
Yes.
So,
part of that service.
Yeah, that was incredible. So Andy will live in my brain and Reading's history forever.
And hopefully as we move forward with the museum, he will be in the museum history offered so we can tell his story.
Yeah.
Because one man with the knowledge and the history that he had and the perseverance to stay in the Army during that time frame, it's so important for us to tell that story of perseverance and honor and courage. I mean, because he served. He didn't just serve in the United States. He served in duty, too.
Yeah.
And so and when he finally retired, he was a master sergeant?
Yes.
So he was a master sergeant.
Yeah, and he didn't even have 11. He did not have a high school education. And today's Army, you have to have pretty good education to get promoted that high.
For senior enlisted, you have to have a bachelor's degree above E7.
Yeah, and he had nothing. But because he, it was so – it was a lot different back then.
Well, I mean, and even so, at that time, many of the individuals in the Army didn't have any kind of degree. He had life skills.
Right, exactly.
And life skills was what kept you alive. And,
right.
And that's why he rose, because he – he had wisdom and knowledge and probably a few other things, but that's what kept him going, getting to him to the place where he's at.
Andy was in the Battle of Attu, which is the Aleutian Islands when they were the Midway battle was going on.
Yes,
the Japanese were also invading Alaska, in the islands out there, and Andy was in an infantry unit at the time, and he was part of that keeping the Japs out of
North America.
North America.
That's right, American port.
And
we weren't. Alaska was not a state in the Union yet.
Right.
So so it was unopened territory.
Yeah. But I have all the paperwork, and I actually have a diary of one of the Japanese generals that he left me, that was the Japanese medical officer.
Wow.
Each day by day, on exactly what was going on in that battle.
Talk about a historical opportunity.
Yeah, so Andy left me with so much historical stuff that, it's just unbelievable.
Well, I know that we brought you here to talk about your experience in Vietnam, but because Andy is a fellow friend between the two of us and we're telling his story to the museum, I appreciate the opportunity for us to be able to talk about him as we get ready to talk about your story.
Yeah, most of my veteran friends in my unit all know Andy, because he did. He became part of our everyday life, and we really hated to see him pass away.
Well, and, you know, I've known so many World War II veterans and elderly veterans throughout my life, and what a privilege it was to have him there at our opening and to shake his hand and to talk to him and have him be so opportunistic to tell people about his story. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Ken Jenkins, who is our Vietnam veteran guest this morning. We talk about his story as we come back with 11 ACR. And so hang in there. We'll be right back.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in just one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. These tests do not prevent colon cancer. Only a colonoscopy can do that by removing polyps before they become cancerous. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has the chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision. In our 50 years in business, we've met many interesting people. One customer complained the car pulled hard to the right. When I inspected the car, I noticed a small bag of rocks tied to the left side of her steering wheel. The customer stated that on long trips, the rocks would counteract the pull. Problem solved. Only temporarily, though. The pull was easily repaired with suspension adjustments and a wheel alignment. Despite being told by another shop the vehicle had major frame problems, having confidence and trust in the professionalism of who is repairing your vehicle is sometimes the greatest struggle. When this customer has a problem with a car, she calls Coachmaster. If the issue isn't our specialty, I'm glad to recommend the best qualified company. After all, this is my customer. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Remember Coachmaster on Eastside Road, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
This is Reading Electric Utility Director Dan Beans. REU is proud to be part of the economic relief to our customers during this difficult time. All REU customers are receiving $250 in credits on their City of Reading utility accounts. In the near future, commercial customers will have the ability to make monthly payments on their outstanding utility account balance for up to 24 months with no interest. REU and the Chamber of Commerce are proud to work together to assist commercial customers as we move forward. Visit readingchamber.com or cityofreading.org for more information or questions related to this important local effort.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
travel light. Our arms were heavy, but our bellies were tight.
Once again, you're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is Goodnight Saigon by Billy Joel, about our Vietnam veterans. Those are actually talking about Marines. But the story continues on. It doesn't matter if you were in the trenches, if you were in the jungle, it was all the same. And you went from your boot camp, and you went to your school, and then you went to the combat zone. And these young men were just like World War II. They were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21. At the beginning of their lives. Our guest this morning is Ken Jenkel. He's 11th ACR, the Armored Cavalry Regiment, 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment, and he was a specialist in the United States Army during that time frame. And Ken, once again, it's a privilege. We want to get to talk. We talked about Andy, and now we just want to move on and talk about your experience in Vietnam to share your stories with those who weren't there and to your brothers who were there.
Yep, I went in November 30th of 1965. And, of course, at that time, we talked a little bit about, not knowing even where Vietnam was. You know, back there after high school and stuff, I heard of Vietnam, but I really never knew it was in Southeast Asia. And that was the way that most of our friends were. And so I went up to Fort Ord. And at that time, Fort Ord was actually closed because of the meningitis scare. So they wouldn't let us in. So they put us on
There's
planes.
There's always something going on someplace. It is what it is.
So they put it on planes, and they flew us to Fort Carson, which they were opening Fort Carson up in Colorado.
I've been to Fort Carson.
Yeah, yeah. Old World War II barracks where, it was freezing in December, January. I tell you, I got 28 degrees below zero out on the rifle range.
Mackerel.
Which is crazy.
Well, when we were on the rifle range, it was 120 degrees. So what a spectrum of temperatures.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't shoot because you're frozen, or you can't shoot because you're overheated. It's one extreme or the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'd rather be hot than cold out there. Because you get cold and you can't get warm.
I don't know. We had guys passing out left and right because they couldn't hydrate fast
enough.
Yeah,
well, Vietnam was pretty hot, too.
And humid.
Hot and humid. Yep. Unbelievable.
Well, you were talking about when you joined the Army, but you didn't join the Army. You were drafted.
Right. Correct.
And so you got your notice and you showed up. And tell us a little bit about your experience going into boot camp and those guys that you served with and then your initial trip and tour into Vietnam.
Well, I went to Fort Carson, went through basic training and AIT there, and of course we went through all of our hand-to-hand combat training, all that basic stuff and marching and stuff, and went to AIT and then went to Camp Pickett in Virginia for our armor training, AP Hill down there, and that's when they started teaching us all about how to drive the ACAVs and so forth. And then we went back up to Fort Meade and we finally got our orders to report to Oakland, where they put us on ships.
So describe the ACAV.
An ACAV is what we called an Armored Cavalry Assault Vehicle, and what it is it's an M113 personnel carrier, okay? And a personnel carrier is designed for just what it says, to get a crew of infantry in there. But what we did is we were kind of like the scouts for the M48 tanks, okay? And so we pulled the seats out, and we turned them into what we called ACAVs, which stands for Armored Cavalry Assault Vehicle. And we pulled the seats out, put 50 caliber ammo cans down that we stood on. We mounted two M60 machine guns on either side of the hatch, and a 50 caliber was on the cupola on the track commander's hatch. And then, of course, you had a driver and a grenadier in the back, five-man crews. So when you hear ACAV, it's really an M13 personnel carrier converted into a kind of a different type.
When I first joined the Seabees back in 89, I qualified in the M60 Echo 3. We were still using the M60 Echo 3 machine gun during that time frame. And so before they switched to the newer ones in the latter part of the beginning of Iraqi freedom. And so I always thought it was so interesting that before a war starts, you end up, when you go in there, you end up using the equipment that's left over from the last war. So 45 ACP handgun, and then the pistol, and then also 38 specials we still use, and then the M60 Echo 3, and then you used the M87 grenade launchers when you were there to be. They had just phased those out to the
M79.
M79, excuse me. And then also you were talking about wearing World War II uniforms when you first joined.
Right. When we first got there, we still had the old fatigues, World War II fatigues, with the black and the U.S. Army in the gold and with the white name tags with your name on it. And, you know, we had the 1911 45s and the M79s and the two M60s. We had, and of course, the good old 50 caliber mounted on the top. But when we first went over there, too, we still had the white underwear and the white T-shirts and the chevrons on our arms. And not soon after we got there, the Army says, you know what, you got to get rid of the chevrons and you got to get rid of the underwear. So they made us turn all of our underwear in at that time. Remember, this is back early 66.
Right.
And we turned all our underwear in, and they dyed it all green and they gave it all back to us. And then when the monsoons came up and the rain came up, all of the green would be washed all over us. And so pretty soon we got to wear no underwear. You know, underwear was just too much of a hassle.
Right.
You didn't get to be changing clothes anyway half the time when you're out in the field.
Especially when everything's stained green.
Yeah. Yeah. So then finally we got issued. We also had the M14 rifle at first. And then we came out and then we got the M16s. And, of course, they were having trouble with the bolts.
Sure. I mean, a little bit of dirt in there and it jammed right up.
Yeah. A story I remember when they were passing out the M16s that came around. And they collected our M14s, and this guy put three M16s behind our vehicle, behind the track. And Tracy Lusk, our driver, didn't realize that he had put the new rifles behind the track, and he backed up, and he backed right over the brand-new rifles.
Just crushed them.
Well,
the difference between the M16A1, which was the first issue, and then also the AK-47, the AK-47 is so sloppy. Then it's like it's just going to fall apart while you're shooting it. But the sloppiness is what kicks all the mud and dirt and everything out of it. The M16A1 has such tight tolerances that you get sand in it or you get debris or mud or anything else, and it's stovepipes. It doesn't feed well. The magazines don't work well with it. And so you constantly had problems in combat with the M16s not working properly in the field.
Right.
And so that had to be frustrating. Also, you're being attacked, and here you are. It'd be better to have the M60 because at least it just blew the rounds right through it no matter what.
Well, being mounted the way we were, our main weapons were the 260s and the 50. Okay, we used the M16s when we were dismounted. My main weapon was the M60. I was a right side gunner on an ACAV. And then we had all our ammunition and stuff. We had a ton of ammunition with us all the time, which was a lot better than an infantry unit, too.
And then you were talking about also that you took all the stuff out of the bottom of your, where your gun mount was, the seats and everything, and you filled those
rackets. They took the seats out, and the first thing we did was put sandbags in the bottom, so in case we did hit a mine, at least we'd have a little bit of protection. Then we put 50 caliber ammo cans lined both sides and used those to stand on, and also used them to hold our ammunition, and we'd use them for extra clothes, too, and you know, because we all had one can that was kind of like our own dresser.
Sure.
In our own little.
It kept it watertight, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
We're talking with Ken Jenkins. He's a Vietnam veteran. When he comes back here in just a minute, we're going to talk about 1966 and Sioux Cat, and talk about an ambush that took place at that time. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. This is KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. Your talk radio show. And we've talked about D-Day, and now we're doing a segment on Vietnam, and we'll be right back.
Reading Rancheria. We are proud to play our part in the community. This is Tracy Edwards, CEO of Reading Rancheria. Since the Community Fund was established, over $3.5 million in grants have been awarded to our local nonprofit organizations. We are dedicated to supporting worthy causes in our region and help make possible the impactful work done by our local nonprofits, and will continue to do so during these changing times. Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide 3 delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Hey, Linda, show's over. Let's hop in the truck and head over to Country Kitchen for breakfast.
Oh, yeah. Country Kitchen is open for that in-dining experience for breakfast and lunch 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. And Country Kitchen has their own in-house bakery, everything home-cooked with the freshest ingredients. Can I hear yum?
You can hear cinnamon rolls. Country Kitchen, locally owned for 27 years, located on Hilltop Drive in the Hillcrest Shopping Center.
Let's go.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us 2 ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
You always wanted to finish your degree. Now is the time, and Simpson University is still open. Our adult degree completion program is flexible, convenient, and affordable. We know you are busy, so you can attend classes here in the Reading area or online and finish your bachelor's degree in as little as 12 to 16 months. Our programs are affordable, convenient, and flexible. Classes are beginning soon. To learn more about how to finish your degree and advance your career, go to simpson.edu or call 530-226-4606.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today, or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
From the Pacific Justice Institute, this is The Legal Edge.
During the COVID-19 pandemic, churches across America had their right to assemble and religious freedom abridged. Folks, our religious freedoms are under attack. Pacific Justice Institute encourages you to vote for candidates and biblical positions that do not hinder the sharing of the gospel.
Learn more about our ministry and get exclusive email updates by registering for The Legal Insider at pji.org.
This is the best of Battlefield Expressions.
Hello, I'm Chris Christopherson. On November 8, 1965, the 173rd Airborne Brigade on Operation Hump, War Zone D in Vietnam, were ambushed by over 1,200 VC. 48 American soldiers lost their lives. Severely wounded and risking his own life, Lawrence Joel, a medic, was the first living black man since the Spanish-American War to receive the United States Medal of Honor for saving so many lives in the midst of battle that day. Our friend Niles Harris, retired 25 years United States Army, the guy who gave Big Kenny his top hat, was one of the wounded who lived. This song is his story. Caught in the action of kill or be killed, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his brother.
Listening to Battlefield Expressions, the 8th of November. We are honoring our Vietnam veterans. This is the 52nd year, the 52nd anniversary of the Vietnam War, starting back in November 1955. And so as we continue, the museum has done a partnership with the Vietnam Commission, the Federal Commission honoring our Vietnam veterans. And throughout this next year, we're going to be, because of the pandemic, we were already going to have a couple of events for our Vietnam veterans, and we were unable to do that. But through the radio program, we're going to continue to talk with our Vietnam veterans and to share their stories and to tell their stories and to make sure that they are not forgotten and to make sure that we can help offset their original homecoming by saying thank you to them and to make sure that that takes place. Just a note here, 1982, the Vietnam Wall was dedicated in Washington, D.C. And so if you've never been there to see that wall as you walk down and it graduates from one end to the other and it goes down into the ground and comes back up, and the names continue to grow as you walk. They start small and they grow sentence and row upon row of the men who gave their lives in Vietnam. And the black granite, as you look at it, and the engraved names end to end as they just flow and they go forever. For almost 200 yards, of the wall carries on. And the different items that are left there at the wall in memory of those young men who gave their lives and didn't make it back home, from their brothers, from their family members, from strangers, saying thank you. They're never honored enough. There's never enough thank yous to be said. And the wall is so somber, but it's silence when you walk. It's silence, and there are people making graft roughings with pencil and paper of the name of a loved one or a friend, or they're looking it up for that individual who gave their life during that time frame. And so this morning we're talking with Ken Jenkel, who is our guest with the 11th ACR, the Black Horse Unit. And Ken, thank you so much for being here this morning. We talked a little bit about your background. We want to talk about your combat experiences. You want to share it with us?
Okay. One of our biggest days that we call our Day of Infamy is December 2nd, 1966. And that was probably the day that we really, really found out that that they weren't playing games out there, that it was all real. And I remember getting up on that morning, and there was some intelligence that said there was a lot of activity out on Highway 1. So there was, I think, three tracks that went out, and they parked, and we dismounted, and we started kind of sweeping through the jungle, dismounted, and kind of walked for probably maybe 20 minutes or so. And we were seeing a lot of brush and stuff. It looked like broken branches, and like a lot of activity had been pulled through there, but we didn't know what was going on. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, it sounded like about four grand finales, 4th of July's going off in front of us. Just unbelievable. Some of the tracers were actually coming through the jungle and going past us. So we ran back out. We jumped on our waiting tracks and jumped in and got behind our machine guns, and then we went down to the road, and there was a left turn, and there was a bridge, and there was an M48 tank that I had saw off to my right, and the turret had completely separated from the tank, it with some kind of a RPG or something, and luckily the track commander was down inside, and it didn't hurt anybody.
Wow.
The track actually separated the M48. And he was standing in the middle of it like, holy cow, man. You know, he just lost the top of the tank. And
it's that shock and fear.
Yeah, and we went to the left, and it looked like Baghdad. You know, tracers were just bouncing and ricocheting just all over the place. And we went in, and we went into our herringbone position, which is a position that your ACAVs and tanks take to kind of cover each other's rear. You know, and there's a field of fire, double
protection, left
protection
right.
For everybody. So we got down there and started firing, and that ambush lasted probably I think about 3-4 hours that night. Of course, the ambush itself lasted all night, but we found out later that there was 400. It was a VC battalion in there that tried to ambush us. And what had happened is they prematurely opened the ambush up because that lead tank that was hit was, the story goes that he accidentally kicked the turret, or he was just kind of turning the turret. But the VC were supposed to blow the bridge and back up that tank so everybody behind them would be caught in an ambush.
Kill zone. Yes.
Okay, kill zone. So anyway, Couple snipers up in the tree started shooting at the tank ahead of time because of that gun turret, and you know, never locked in that tank. It allowed us to go around that corner and get down into the kill zone too. And I know A Troop, C Troop came down. So before they knew it, you know, we had the whole squadron down in there. We also had our captain had called in an airstrike, and I remember a couple F-4 Phantoms coming over my head, and they dropped napalm in front of us. And, you know, it was just a night that I will never forget. And
you know, when you're in a combat experience like that, there's shock and awe. They say shock and awe. There's the experience of this is the first experience, and you're living it immediately. You're trying to make decisions, life and death decisions. And then there's part of you look at, and it's just like, wow, is this really happening? Surreal. It's very surreal that all of a sudden all of this was going on around you. And part of you is in slow motion because your mind is trying to understand what's taking place. And part of you is just frantically trying to respond with rounds down range, trying to protect yourself. And with the yelling and the screaming and the smell of the gunpowder and rounds and the brass bouncing off your vehicle and going everywhere. I mean, it's just, it's an experience. Unless you're there, you can never understand it.
Well, I've always thought that movie, Saving Private Ryan, where they land the beach and it kind of goes in slow motion. You know, I think whoever was directed that particular part really had to be in combat because he did a really good job of making the feeling of slow motion like you just talked about. It is. It's surreal.
That's the way it was in downtown Fallujah when we were under attack. Yeah. It just there's something about it. We're going to take a break real quick and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to Battlefield Expressions.
KCNR Shasta is also broadcasting at K243CT Reading.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need on-time, first-rate medical attention. Shasta Regional Medical Center, located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading, has the fastest possible transit and admission of emergency patients. We at Shasta Medical Center are dedicated to all patients who need care, regardless of their ability to pay. Shasta Regional Medical Center, delivering patient-centered health care with compassion, dignity, and respect for every patient and their family.
The Fatville and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Tobacco and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny with Shasta Gas Propane. Shasta Gas has been in business for 23 years, and my daughter, Karen, has worked here for 22 of those years. She started out driving our big delivery truck, filling tanks when it was 110 degrees in the summer and in the snow in the winter. Many years ago, she moved from delivery and field work to the office with my wife, Judy. Judy is retired, and now Karen is taking over her responsibilities. To further our commitment to locally owned and family-operated businesses in Shasta County, I'm introducing my daughter Karen to you, so if you call the office and I'm not here, ask for her or her husband, Jason. Karen, please say hi.
Hi, this is Karen Wehunt, Chuck's daughter. Since Chuck and Judy are spending more time together outside of the business, my husband Jason and I are here holding down the fort. We are here to answer any questions you may have and to continue the great service our customers have received these many years. Please give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Tune into North State Now Thursday nights at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Our show features yours truly, Linda Bott, with Michelle Slade, Enjoy the Magazine, and Dr. Orna Gill, featuring music, art, health, wellness, shopping, and more.
Fighting soldiers from the sky,
Fearless men who jump and die, men who mean just what they say, the brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand, men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest, these are men, America's best. 100 men we'll test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest, make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Good morning. You're listening to Battlefield Expressions. And that is Ballad of the Green Beret by Sergeant Barry Sadler, 1966. And that applies to all of our Vietnam veterans who were there, who served, and who sacrificed. And, of course, including the Green Berets, Special Forces. And so, again, our guest this morning is Ken Jenkel. He is with the Black Horse Unit, the 11th ACR Armored Cavalry Regiment. And we're talking about Sukat, which was a major offensive second of December 1966. Ken, continue to tell us your experience at that time and where you were wounded and that how you made it back to your camp and then your experience coming home, because we're in the last 12 minutes.
Well, I remember after that ambush, I remember the very next morning, there was so much shells all over the road that in my memory, I call it the Brass Road or the Wizard of Oz, that there were so many bullets that had fired that night. And I know the body count for the VC was 99 at that time, and we only lost one guy in the 11th Cav. And in fact, he wasn't even in the 11th Cav. He was an engineer from what I understand that had hooked a ride to go out to Gia Ray, our rock quarry. And he was sitting on the back of the Cav, and when the ambush broke out, he jumped off and got killed. But it was unbelievable. Unbelievable night, and it's like, you know, we were just talking about, so you just can't believe that something like that would really happen. I remember sometimes laying down on the track and waking up after sleeping a while and looking at the sky thinking, okay, that was all a dream. I'm not really here, you know, and when I turn, you know, I sit up, it's going to be like I'm right back at home again, and reality kind of set in, like, no, I'm still here.
Too late to leave and too soon to go home.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, I'm never going. It seems like I was there forever and my whole life had been there. And you know, they finally cleaned up that whole mess out there, and we went back in, and I've had a couple other experiences on ambush patrols. And one of my first experiences was when we were in base camp and we got called up to mount up. So we went out, and there was the spot where I was, there was a burning French bus, a small French bus. And there was a woman that had been hooked onto the bumper, that was, you know, 10 feet away from me, and her body had rolled. She had expired, And I saw her kind of catch on fire. Everything was burning. And then the elephant grass in front of me started to shake it a little bit. And there was Vietnamese language coming out of the grass. And it scared the daylights out of me. This is my very first combat experience at all. And I could see these Vietnamese people coming through the grass. And my first expression was, oh, my God, the VC are coming back. You know, they're going to come in and get me. And to my amazement, they sent out a woman that was breastfeeding a baby. And thank God I didn't pull the trigger. But boy, oh boy, did that, that's an everlasting memory. That was 54 years ago. And
how old were you?
I was 20.
20 years old.
I was 20 at that time. And
what a reality check.
Yeah, boy, oh boy, I tell you, that's when you started realizing that's the difference between a new guy and a veteran is when you start getting that reality to kick in, and they're not, you know, reality's not fooling around.
Well, and that's part of that PTSD. PTSD is a indelible experience that will not go away. You keep experiencing over and over again. And for many of our veterans who were in combat and experienced those things, and even such in your life, those were just two experiences of the many experiences that you had. While you there now, were you injured at Katsu, or were you injured?
No, I didn't get hit until March 9th of 1967, and that was kind of we had secured a helicopter. A big Chinook had got shot down, and they had an oil line or something that was shot up. So we went in and we secured them and kind of standard guard around the helicopter while we fixed it. And in the morning we mounted up and we went back out to the road. And when we went back out to the road, we got hit. And, you know, of course, something like that is in my memory of the explosion. And I really don't know too much of what happened at that time. I did run into a guy at a reunion. Says Kenny, says the last time I saw you, you were cussing me out. You know, the day you left, I asked, his name was Alvin Badgett. I said, what are you talking about? He says, yeah, after you got hit, they put you on the track. And those tracks are really bouncy.
Right.
And they took me out of the ambush site to the helicopter. And, I mean, I was hurt, okay, hit in the side.
You broke ribs?
Oh, they took my spleen out. I had pretty bad. I had been hit by four projectiles, some kind of, I still don't know what it was, an RPG that ricocheted off the cupola or what it was. But he said I was cussing him out, and I told him, I says, Badgett, you hit one more bump, and I'm going to come up there and kick the shit out of you. I never knew that story until he told me that. But you know, it's funny being to the association now, seeing all these guys that we all knew so long ago.
Sure, you're in high school.
Yeah.
Well, you're young.
Yeah, and we all come up with our own little stories and things that I don't remember. I had one guy tell me, he says, you know, with basic training, don't you remember we were on that trail and we volunteered for driving a truck? We raised our hands and it was wheelbarrowing. Okay, so you were in back of me at the end of the line, and there was a V in the trail, and you told us, go the other trail. Don't go to the brickyard, right? So we went to the NCO club and drank beer all afternoon. So there's some stories there. Somebody told me one time the Army's worth $1 million worth of memories, but you'd never take $1 million to ever do it again.
That's right. You don't get rich by digging a ditch.
Yeah, so there's some good stories, too, in there that you can remember people bring up and say, yeah, do you remember that?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Send you to Vietnam?
Yeah.
Right? What are they going to do? Send us to Vietnam?
That's exactly right.
Right. You're headed there anyway. Well, Ken, we still have about 2 minutes. I just want to say thank you for being here. I know that you lost some of your friends during that time frame. And would you like to mention their names and honor them this morning and by mentioning their names and where they were when they were lost their lives?
Well, we got Lynn Jenkins that was hit by friendly fire. We got Fred Hart that was right next to me on January 2nd. Felix Galavis is still a good friend of mine. He lives in Hayward, California. He was hit three times right next to me. And then we've lost quite a few guys since we've come home. John Quinn was a real good friend. Alvin Badgett, the one that I just talked about, he's expired. We lost our platoon sergeant, Swindler, and let's see, who else? Kraser, we lost Kraser. We lost, we've lost so many that it's just, it's hard to, I do have a flag at home that I've taken, and I've got put any time that we lose anybody, I put their name on it. Because our B Troop 2nd Platoon, 1st Squadron, 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment was a very, very special unit. And we're still very close today. We still know, there's still about 17 of us that are still in contact today because of the association, which is awesome.
It's the brotherhood.
Yeah.
It's the brotherhood.
And that's, we are.
Life and death.
We are truly brothers. No matter, you know, skin color, nationality, or whatever, man, we are true, true brothers, which makes us, one hell of a camaraderie association.
And I think, awesome. You know, Ken, I think part of that camaraderie that you still have as part of your PTSD therapy, knowing that if you have an issue, you can call that buddy and reminisce with them or talk with them, and they can talk you through the dark spot through the years. And, but not having that is where you soul search and you just try to figure out things on your own, but sometimes it's so difficult. And we've got about 30 seconds left, and we remember. That's what this is about. It's your story. It's about us remembering those men that you served with that lost their lives there.